Good morning, holy people of God, you who are cherished and loved by our Heavenly Father. It's good to worship with you this morning. We will be looking at an aspect of this theme of standing firm, a little bit different angle, and may quite possibly be one of the hardest parts of standing firm. And there's a story that I'm excited to tell you about one of the greatest vocalists of the 20th century. But that's coming at the end, so you have that to look forward to. This series has already been very rich in what we've heard so far, with Logan challenging us to be on mission with God, with Jeff urging us to stand firm by pouring ourselves out in service and then thereby finding joy, with Matthew Bardwell talking about standing firm in Jesus and really depending on Him to be the one to help us to stand. And as Steve Autry's sermon was already mentioned, about taking on this challenge of hospitality, this lost practice of hospitality. And I was impacted by the elders of this church confessing and making a commitment to that practice. And then last week, with Jim Martin giving us this image of two hands, with one hand that we can bring all of our worries and needs to the Lord, and then with the other hand, we can dare to just cling on to Him. And so it is important to remember these things as we look at standing firm from a different angle this morning. So I said it may be the hardest part, and likely it will be harder for some of us more so than others. But as you know, many times the hardest things that we do in life are also the things that are the most rewarding. So if what I share with you this morning starts to grate against you in a way that's uncomfortable or causes you to shift in your chair in an uncomfortable way, just remember that if this is something that we can put into greater practice, that there is a lot of potential gain from it. So this is what I want to propose to you this morning. When it comes to standing firm, that asking others for help is one of the biggest things that will enable us to do that. Indeed, as the slide shows us, that asking someone else for help is one of the most important things we can do in growing our faith and in growing the kingdom. I'm going to say it one more time. That asking someone else for help is one of the most important things we can do in building our own faith and in growing the kingdom. What's one of the last times you had to ask someone for help? I would love an example after I share this example. If somebody has one that you would like to share. So I had to ask for help in language learning. And you may think, well, yeah, you know, you guys lived overseas. Of course, you had to have help language learning. But that's not what I'm talking about. Because over there, we paid somebody to help us learn language. So that's not the same thing. I'm talking about when we moved back to the States. We found that during the time overseas that the language had changed a little bit, and we got back and people are saying stuff in different ways. And I'm like, so here's an example. We get back and we hear people talking, and all of a sudden, like, we hear all these things about wheelhouses and people that have things in their wheelhouse, things that they don't have in their wheelhouse. I'm thinking, where are they getting these wheelhouses, and where am I supposed to get my wheelhouse? What do I keep in there? Or I'm starting to ask, like, why? Did people really start drinking from fire hoses so much that that became a popular expression? That seems crazy. And so if that's true, did lip replacement surgery also become a need while we were gone? I don't understand. Or what about the use of the word space when, you know, we were used to people using space to describe, like, physical locations, and now all of a sudden people are holding space for one another? Or they're like, they say, I need to make space for this in my life. And it took us a while to realize, oh, they're actually using that word to refer to, like, time and scheduling and that kind of thing. And this isn't even touching on the things that the teenagers are saying, right? So this is where I had to ask for help. I had to ask my son Titus, like, can you help me understand some of this stuff? And I know this is not uncommon. This is not just specific to us. Like, you other parents have had to ask this. So I'm asking Titus, like, okay, what does this mean? Like, people are dripping and there's cap and no cap and they've got vibes and they're like lit with their riz. What is all this stuff talking about? And should we be concerned with all the slaying that's happening? I mean, it seems like it's getting violent around here. And so Titus helped me understand. But then Titus also helped me when I tried to put my newly acquired language skills into use in a group thread. And he's like, Dad, you can never do that again. Don't ever do that. So appreciated that. Did anybody have an example that you could share really quickly of maybe a recent time you had to ask for help, something that was hard to ask for help, or something maybe a little embarrassing? If you don't, it's okay, we'll move on. No hands. Oh, okay, here we go. Here we go.
Last year, I was just very overwhelmed at work with a particular project, and I was about ready to break down. I saw my boss in the parking garage and just, you know, told him how I'm feeling and what was going on, and he really stepped in there and helped out, got me help, and so that was a time where I just didn't want to, but just had to ask for help.
Thanks for sharing that, Charles. So sometimes we have to graciously. Oh, you got it. Okay. Do it.
May it take a minute.
So I have two that came.
This doesn't count towards my sermon time, out. Right?
So, go ahead. Right. So one was our smoke detector. You know, me in normal body, I zip up there, change the battery, and get back down because it's annoying. It's loud.
Right.
I had to call the fire department. You know, because it was on the weekend and stuff like that, and people always at a morning. It was early in the morning, as you know, uncomfortable things happen usually at abnormal time.
Worst
so, anyways,
time.
That happened. Then, also, what happened? Oh, snow. The last big snow. I'm a physical guy, so I like to take everything and do everything, but I can't anymore. So I had to actually call a neighbor to help out, get some of this stuff out the way until I can do a lot of the other stuff. So that was real vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it. Yeah, so sometimes we have to graciously accept help from other people, and sometimes we have to ask. But we don't like to ask for help, do we? It's not fun. Look at this next slide. Here's some of the reasons why it's not fun. Because it can make us feel incompetent or even irresponsible, like, I can't handle this on my own, or I didn't plan well enough. It can make us feel like we're imposing on somebody else. It can make us feel childish because, you know, we spend so much time as parents getting our children to the point that they can say, what? I did it all by myself. And then we expect them to do more and more and more on their own. So why in the world would we go backwards? Why would we go backwards? It's inconvenient. We know we can get that done faster on our own. Or maybe it's even from past hurts. We asked somebody to help us and they didn't come through. So we don't want to ask again with the risk of feeling let down again. And I want to say one more thing. Specifically in our culture here of Western individualism, that can be a big hindrance in us asking for help. And there's an expression that I think all of you know. You can help me by completing it. That we use here a lot. It says that we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, right? Like, how did that even become a phrase? It's when you think about it, it's kind of crazy. Well, apparently the earliest published reference is from 1834. Somebody made this claim that they had discovered perpetual motion. And so a national newspaper picked it up and they printed it, and they put it in there with this ridiculing remark that this individual had probably also succeeded in handing himself over the Cumberland River or over a barnyard fence by the straps of his boots. Tennessee reference, Mike. Good. Yep. And yet, over time, you know, this phrase, the ridiculousness of that phrase wore off. And in our culture, we do kind of think, I only need myself to get ahead, don't we? We do kind of think that. So that can help us understand why that mindset of individualism can be a big obstacle. So, you know, asking other people for help, I think a lot of times it's harder than being the one to try to help somebody else. We would much rather help somebody else than be the one to ask. And it can also be harder than asking God for help, because with me and God, I can go in my closet and I can pray and nobody else hears what I asked him, and nobody else knows if he doesn't come through for me the way I wanted him to. But remember again that first we must be asking the Lord. That's the foundation. Just like I already mentioned, Matthew and Jim urging us to depend more on the Lord. That's the foundation. We have to start by asking the Lord for help. But then we also have to ask each other for help. So let's look at a couple scripture examples before we dive a little deeper into John chapter 4. So this story in 1 Kings, this is nuts. So Elijah, he's a prophet in the Old Testament, right? And he predicted that a famine was coming on the land. It was going to last several years. And so God said, go out in the wilderness. There's this brook. Camp out there. And then these ravens come in and they start giving him food to sustain him. So he's there eating this food, drinking the water out of the brook until the brook runs dry. And now God says, all right, now go to this village of Zarephath, and it's outside of Israel's territory. He says, go there, find this widow. I commanded the widow to feed you. So Elijah goes into the town, finds the widow, and he says, can you give me a drink of water? And she goes off to get him a drink of water. And he said, oh, and by the way, can you give me a bite to eat? And she turns around and says, I swear by Yahweh, your God, I don't even have a small piece of bread in my house. She said, actually, what I'm doing right now is I'm going to get some firewood. We're going to cook this last handful of flour and bit of oil for me and my son. We're going to eat that, and then we're just going to die. That's our plan. We don't have anything else. I mean, if I were Elijah at that point, I would have been like, oh, geez, well, you know, sorry, maybe I misunderstood. I thought God told you to feed me, but, you know, the ravens were doing a good job. Maybe I'll go try to find them again. But Elijah didn't do that. He believes in the Lord, and he says, go prepare the meal. Give some to me first, and then there'll be enough for all of us. And that's what happened over the course of the years. That, and some of you are familiar with that story, that there was always enough flour. There was always enough oil to make what they needed. And sadly, during that time, her son passed away. And Elijah, you know, cried out to God, and God brought that son back to life. And in this crazy story of him needing and asking for help, at the end of this, the woman says to him, I know now for sure that you are a man of God and that Yahweh truly speaks through you. Or this story in Luke chapter 3. So, I'm sorry, Luke chapter 8. Verses 1 through 3, there's this group of people that are following Jesus around. He's got the 12 disciples, and they're going around talking about the good news. And it says that there was also some women whom he had healed, and he lists them, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, the wife of Chuza, who is Herod's business manager, and Susanna, and many others. And this is what I want you to see, is that they were contributing from their own resources to support Jesus and his disciples. Now, that's kind of even crazier when you think about just a few chapters before. Those disciples, the first ones that Jesus called, he did this miraculous sign. They were fishermen, and he caused this miraculous catch of fish. He provided in a huge way. Could have been the, you know, one of the largest catches of fish they had ever had in their business as fishermen. And what does Jesus call them to do? Walk away from it all. Leave it, and now you're going to follow me into a life of dependence where we have to depend on the contributions of people like this group and these women who are giving to us. And then when you think about in just the very next chapter, in Luke chapter 9, what miracle does Jesus do? He multiplies 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, and he feeds thousands of people. I mean, if I were in that group of women and people that were contributing, I'd be like, well, I guess he doesn't need my contributions anymore. But, you know, we don't read after that every time Jesus and the disciples got hungry, they go looking for a kid for his lunch and be like, hey, can I borrow that? We're going to, you know, he didn't do that. So we have to assume that this is the way that their ministry was continued to funded, by receiving the help of others. And then in Ephesians chapter 6, this is just one example of many times that the Apostle Paul asked the believers for prayer. It says in verse 19, and pray for me too. Ask God to give me the right words so I can boldly explain God's mysterious plan. And in verse 20, he says, so pray that I will keep on speaking boldly for him as I should. I mean, here's a guy that wrote most of our New Testament, and yet he continually asked for prayers of the saints as if his work depended on it, because I think he knew that it did. All right, so let's look a little bit more into John chapter 4. I'm going to skip down to the section where it says, and it's on this next slide here, verse 9, where it says, the woman was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. Okay, this is right at the moment when Jesus said, please give me a drink. So do you see what's happening here? The social norms of the day dictate that a Jewish man, a rabbi nonetheless, would have nothing to do with a Samaritan woman. So a Jewish man in this situation would be expected to remain parched rather than to stoop to the level of asking for help from someone like her. She said to Jesus, "You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" And Jesus replied, "If you only knew the gift God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me, and I would give you living water." So as we already saw in the story, that launches into the story. You know, she's all like, "Oh yeah, I want this living water. I never have to come back here again." And she gets all excited. He's like, "Okay, go get your husband." And she's like, "Well, I don't have a husband." And that goes into the conversation where he like literally knows her whole life and her marriage, you know, track record. And then she's amazed at that. And that prompts her to think about this huge divisive issue of worship and how, you know, the Samaritans say we should worship on this hill, but you Jews say we should worship over here. And Jesus talks to her about that. And then that prompts her to say, "I know one day the Messiah is coming and he's going to explain all this to us." And at that moment, Jesus reveals to her, "I am the Messiah." And she gets so excited that she leaves the jar, the bucket, everything, and she runs off. And you know, you notice we never know if Jesus gets his drink of water or not. It's like this huge cliffhanger in the story. So she runs off right as the disciples are coming up. And the disciples are just as shocked. They're like, "Why were you talking to her?" And she goes in and tells the town what happened. Meanwhile, he has a discussion with the disciples, and people come streaming out of the town. And we pick back up. I don't have this up here, but we pick back up later at the end of the chapter, and it says, "Many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus because the woman had said, 'He told me everything I ever did.' And when they came out to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. So he stayed 2 more days, long enough for many to hear his message and to believe. And they said to the woman, 'Now we believe, not just because of what you told us, but because we heard him ourselves. And now we know that he is indeed the Savior of the world.'" And did you notice the point in that story when everything changed? When everything changed, it was the moment when Jesus crossed established social boundaries. He put himself in a lowly position of need by asking this woman, and he asked this woman to meet that need for him. It's mind-boggling, is it not? The Son of God coming. He came needy, and he needed help from other people. So there's benefits for asking for help, and it's on the next slide. Let's go through a couple of those. Okay, we see this immediately with what Jesus did. It starts breaking down barriers. It starts breaking down defenses. How can I be intimidated by you if you're needed something from me? It keeps us humble by recognizing that there are God-given strengths and abilities in others. It's also telling me I don't have to have all the answers, because I know God has provided answers among the people around me. It anticipates what others can bring. It is not scared of differences. When we ask for other people for help, this is anticipating what is in somebody else they can bring. It honors their image, their role as an image bearer of the Lord. So Jesus didn't just see this lady as a Samaritan woman. He saw her as an image bearer of the Lord, and he knew that he was sending the very first missionary out. He was sending his very first missionary out to go back to her village and preach the good news. And last, it builds stronger relationships between the person who asks and the person who receives. One small example of this is last fall, we threw a block party on our street. We closed it all down. We invited everybody out. You know, we had a huge barbecue party out in the middle of the road. And it was fun. Like, even Daniel and I, yesterday at the library, we ran into one of our neighbors who we would not have known if it weren't for that block party. But I will tell you this, out of the 50 people that came out on the street that day, there's 3 families that we became closer to in a more significant way than anybody else. And it was the 3 families that we asked to help us plan the party. And here's another fun example. So there's a couple that have kids at the same school where our daughter Anne goes to school. And this couple decided to start a text group called The Borrowers. And the whole point of it here is that, you know, if I've got a project going on, like, why am I going to go down to Harbor Freight again and buy one tool that I'm probably going to only use one time, and then it's going to sit there and clutter up my workbench, right? to take confidence in the fact that in a group of people, like, we can meet each other's needs. And so that's what this whole text right is. Hey, do you have this? I want to borrow it. And then in the midst of that, relationships are being strengthened and built. And so now here's a story that I've been excited to tell you. Mahalia Jackson was widely acclaimed as the Queen of Gospel by the time she had met Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1956. He first asked her for help to come sing at a bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama. And then he continued to ask for her help until she actually became one of the leaders in the civil rights movement. So they worked together, and little did Martin Luther King know that when he asked her for help that first time, that it would end up changing his most famous speech ever. You see, over the years of working together, they became so familiar with each other's repertoire that leading up to the march on Washington Hill, and go back to that previous picture just real quick, leading up to the march on Washington in August of 1963, MLK specifically asked Mahalia to sing the gospel song, "I've Been Buked and I've Been Scorned," which she did. And you can see him sitting down there in the corner listening to her. And then as he got up to prepare to deliver his prepared speech, you can go to the next picture. Now you see him at the lectern and her down there in the corner listening. He gets into a speech, and she is also very familiar with his repertoire, and she's not feeling like this speech is going exactly where it needs to go. And a little over halfway through the speech, she calls out and she says, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." And at that point in the speech, you see Martin Luther King Jr. stop looking at the notes that he had brought that day. And he launches into this improvisation in the speech that goes into the most famous part of the speech that we know today, and made that speech one of the most famous speeches in the world, and continued the progress of the civil rights movement. So what if he had never asked Mahalia Jackson for her help? Church, what if we didn't view asking for help as a last resort? What if we weren't nervous about us asking others for help? But what if instead we were more nervous to not ask somebody for help because of what it might be depriving us of if we didn't have somebody else involved in it? Church, just like the song we sang this morning, "Going Out on the Waters," we have to go to the places where we are not enough, because we'll find that God's already there. And he has also provided the people there that can help us, that we need. So can we do this? Can we ask for help? Who would we ask for help? You know, could you do this as a family? If we took up this charge of hospitality and you feel intimidated by it, but maybe you know another family who's really good at it, could you ask them for help? Could you reach out to them? What about as a small group? If you're a part of any small group, what could a small group do? Well, our Thursday morning huddle group, you know, they decided they wanted to be a part of getting more formula for babies in West Africa who had lost their moms. And so they started brainstorming, wanted to get more people involved. And that's where Mini Golf for Missions came from. And you guys have been involved in that. We've had so much fun with that over the years, watching God provide through that. Or what about us as a church? What if as a church we felt God calling us to something that was bigger than the capabilities that is within this congregation? What kingdom partnerships might be born? So there's three things I want to ask all of you to do. If you have something to write with, you can jot these down. Here's the first one. What is one thing you can ask for God to help you with this week? Just one thing. Start small. One thing that maybe you've been putting it off. You know you've needed God's help on this and you've put it off. Can you ask him for help on that this week? Second, what is one thing that you can reach out and ask somebody else to pray for you about? And third, what is one thing that you can ask someone to help you with? What is one thing that you can ask someone to help you with this week? Again, it doesn't have to be a huge, you know, start small, but just to get us into this discipline and into this practice of reaching out. Take the risk of asking someone for help, because God designed us to need each other in deeper ways than we are typically taking advantage of. May the Lord help us do this. Grace and peace be with you all.